This is WJFF Jeffersonville, W233 AH Monticello, public radio for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania.
This is live special coverage from NPR News. Joining you from Washington, D.C., I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Scott Detrow. The Senate is preparing to continue the impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. It's, of course, the second such trial in a little more than a year. We're going to hear closing arguments today, and we could possibly get a final vote from the U.S. Senate. In a moment, Senate Chaplain Rear Admiral Barry Black will begin the morning session with a prayer. We are waiting for the Senate to convene here. From our feed, Patrick Leahy, the Senate President Pro Tem, has not yet made his way into the chamber. This is a 10 o'clock start today. Other days of the trial have started at noon. So we're just waiting for the Senate to convene here.
And, of course, we'll carry the full trial on NPR News. We're going to check facts and add context if needed. I want to also just mention our team today, NPR congressional reporter Claudia Grisales, NPR White House correspondent Tamara Keith, and NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg will all
Senate
be on hand.
The Senate will convene as a court of impeachment, and the
and
chaplain,
the gavel.
Dr. Barry Black, will lead us in prayer, which I have ordered.
Here comes Barry Black to begin the day with a prayer.
Order, and the chaplain will lead us in prayer.
Let us pray. O Lord our God, yesterday this chamber reverberated to a standing ovation for the courage of Officer Eugene Goodman in defending this building and human life. May our legislative jurors strive to emulate his courage in their defense of the United States Constitution. Lord, touch and move them to believe that the end does not justify the means. Help them to remember that the end is inherent and built in to the means. Fill our senators with a spirit that combines common sense with commitment, conscience, and courage. We pray in your merciful name, amen.
And that was Senate Chaplain Rear Admiral Barry Black. And now for the Pledge of Allegiance.
The Pledge of Allegiance.
And Scott, can you set us up for what we're going to be hearing today?
Yeah, we're going to hear closing arguments from both sides and then possibly the final vote. We do have a bit of news from our colleague Susan Davis. She confirms that Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has told his Republican colleagues he will vote to acquit the former president. You know, shortly after the January 6th attacks, he indicated he, through aides, he supported the idea of impeachment and that he was keeping his mind open. This shows Republicans will likely close ranks just like they did during the last impeachment trial.
No objection. The journal
and this is the voice of Patrick
of
Leahy
trial
of Vermont.
Approved to date, and I'd ask the Sergeant-at-Arms to make the proclamation.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons are commanded to keep silence on pain of imprisonment while the Senate of the United States is sitting for the trial of the article of impeachment exhibited by the House of Representatives against Donald John Trump, former President of the United States.
And pursuant to the provisions of Senate Resolution 47, the Senate has provided up to 2 hours of argument by the parties, equally divided, on the question of whether or not it shall be in order to consider and debate under the impeachment rules any motion to subpoena witnesses or documents. Are both parties ready to proceed at this point?
And again, laying out the day, 2 hours of argument on the question of whether or not there should be witnesses. Scott Detrow, I know this is something that's been discussed this week.
It is. And all indications are that the House Democratic managers will not move for witnesses. There are a lot of open questions about what happened on January 6th, particularly what the president was doing in the White House.
Senators,
Jamie Raskin is the lead manager.
Over the last several days, we presented overwhelming evidence that establishes the charges in the article of impeachment. We've shown you how President Trump created a powder keg, lit a match, and then continued his incitement even as he failed to defend us from the ensuing violence. We've supported our position with images, videos, affidavits, documents, tweets, and other evidence, leaving no doubt that the Senate should convict. We believe we've proven our case. But last night, Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler of Washington State issued a statement confirming that in the middle of the insurrection, when House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy called the president to beg for help, President Trump responded, and I quote, "Well, Kevin, I guess these people are more upset about the election than you are." Needless to say, this is an additional critical piece of corroborating evidence, further confirming the charges before you, as well as the president's willful dereliction of duty and desertion of duty as Commander-in-Chief of the United States, his state of mind, and his further incitement of the insurrection on January 6th. For that reason, and because this is the proper time to do so under the resolution that the Senate adopted to set the rules for the trial, we would like the opportunity to subpoena Congresswoman Herrera regarding her communications with House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, and to subpoena her contemporaneous notes that she made regarding what President Trump told Kevin McCarthy in the middle of the insurrection. We would be prepared to proceed by Zoom deposition of an hour or less, just as soon as Congresswoman Herrera Butler is available, and to then proceed to the next phase of the trial, including the introduction of that testimony shortly thereafter. Congresswoman Butler further stated that she hopes other witnesses to this part of the story, other patriots, as she put it, would come forward. And if that happens, we would seek the opportunity to take their depositions via Zoom, also for less than an hour, or to subpoena other relevant documents as well.
This is an unexpected twist from the House Democratic managers subpoenaing Jamie Herrera Butler, a Republican congresswoman who voted to impeach President Trump.
The first thing I want to say on the issue of witnesses is that the House manager just got up here and described the articles of impeachment and the charges. There is no plural here. That's wrong.
This is Michael Vanderveen, one of former President Trump's lawyers.
There's one charge, and that's incitement of violence and insurrection. What you all need to know and the American people need to know is, as of late yesterday afternoon, there was a stipulation going around that there weren't going to be any witnesses. But after what happened here in this chamber yesterday, the House managers realized they did not investigate this case before bringing the impeachment. They did not give the proper consideration and work. They didn't put the work in that was necessary to impeach the former president. But if they want to have witnesses, I'm going to need at least over 100 depositions, not just one. The real issue is incitement. They put into their case over 100 witnesses, people who have been charged with crimes by the federal government. And each one of those, they said that Mr. Trump was a co-conspirator with. That's not true. But I have the right to defend that. The only thing that I ask, if you vote for witnesses, do not handcuff me by limiting the number of witnesses that I can have. I need to do a thorough investigation that they did not do. I need to do the 911 style investigation that Nancy Pelosi called for. Should have been done already. It's a dereliction of the House manager's duty that they didn't. And now at the last minute, after a stipulation had apparently been worked out, they want to go back on that. I think that's inappropriate and improper. We should close this case out today. We have each prepared our closing arguments. I had 8 days to get ready for this thing. But we each had those 8 days equally together to prepare ourselves. And the House managers need to live with the case that they brought. But if they don't, please, in all fairness and in all due process, do not limit my ability to discover the truth. That would be another sham. And that's the president's position, my position.
That's Michael Van Der Veen, Trump attorney.
Mr. Askin.
Thank you, Mr. President. First of all, this is the proper time that we were assigned to talk about witnesses. This is completely within the course of the rules set forth by the Senate. There's nothing remotely unusual about
this. This is House Democratic lead manager Jamie Raskin responding to Michael Van Der Veen.
Comprehensive job with all the evidence that was available last night. This was breaking news, and it responded directly to a question that was being raised by the president's defense counsel, saying that we had not sufficiently proven to their satisfaction, although I think we've proven to the satisfaction of the American people, certainly, that the president, after the breach and the invasion took place, was not working on the side of defending the Capitol, but rather was continuing to pursue his political goals. And the information that came out last night by Congresswoman Butler, apparently backed up by contemporaneous notes that she had taken, I think will put to rest any lingering doubts raised by the president's counsel, who now says he wants to interview hundreds of people. There's only one person the president's counsel really needs to interview, and that's their own client. And bring him forward, as we suggested last week, because a lot of this is matters that are in his head. Why did he not act to defend the country after he learned of the attack? Why was he continuing to press the political case? But this piece of evidence is relevant to that.
If I may.
And finally, I was a little bit mystified by the point about the article of impeachment, which I referred to. The dereliction of duty, the desertion of duty, is built into the incitement charge, obviously. If the President of the United States is out inciting a violent insurrection, he's obviously not doing his job at the same time. Just like if a police officer is mugging you, yeah, he's guilty of theft and armed robbery, whatever it might be, but he's also not doing his job as a police officer, so it's further evidence of his intent and what his conduct is.
Counsel?
First of all, it's my understanding, it's been reported, that Mr. McCarthy disclaims the rumors that have been the basis of this morning's antics, but really the rumors that have been the basis of this entire proceeding. This entire proceeding is based on rumor, report, innuendo. There's nothing to it, and they didn't do their work. Just like what happened with Mr. Lee 2 or 3 nights ago, some supposed conversation had happened, and they had to withdraw that. They had to back off of that because it was false. It was a false narrative. But it is one article of impeachment. Yeah, they threw a lot of stuff in it in violation of Rule 23. Rule 23 says you cannot combine counts. It's a defect in their entire case. It's one of the 4 reasons why you can vote to acquit in this case. Jurisdiction, Rule 23, due process, and the First Amendment. They all apply in this case. Let me take my own advice and cool the temperature in the room a little bit. It's about the incitement. It's not about what happened afterwards. That's actually the irrelevant stuff. That's the irrelevant stuff. It's not the things that were said from the election to January 6th. It's not relevant to the legal analysis of the issues that are before this body. It doesn't matter what happened after the insurgents into the Capitol building, because that doesn't have to do with incitement. Incitement is a point in time, folks. It's a point in time when the words are spoken and the words say, implicitly say, explicitly say, commit acts of violence or lawlessness. And we don't have that here. So for the House managers to say we need depositions about things that happened after, it's not just not true. But if he does, there are a lot of depositions that need to be happened. Nancy Pelosi's deposition needs to be taken. Vice President Harris's deposition absolutely needs to be taken. And not by Zoom. None of these depositions should be done by Zoom. We didn't do this hearing by Zoom. These depositions should be done in person, in my office, in Philadelphia. That's where they should be done. I don't know how many civil lawyers are here, but that's the way it works, folks. When you want somebody's deposition, you send a notice of deposition, and they appear at the place where the notice says. That's civil process. I don't know why you're laughing. It is civil process. That is the way lawyers do it. We send notices of deposition.
I would remind everybody that we will have order in chamber during these proceedings.
I haven't laughed at any of you. And there's nothing laughable here. He mentioned my client.
This is Michael Vanderveen, one of former President Trump's attorneys. He's a personal injury attorney based in, as he mentioned, Philadelphia. He has gotten contentious at points in this trial and criticized members of the Senate who are serving as jurors here. You could hear the chamber laughing at some of his statements.
And again, the argument here, the debate is over whether or not to have witnesses in this impeachment trial.
For four reasons. There is no jurisdiction here. There has been no due process here. They have completely violated and ignored and stepped on the Constitution of the United States. They have trampled on it like people who have no respect for it. And if this is about nothing else, it has to be about the respect of our country, our Constitution, and all of the people that make it up. And so that I ask when considering or voting on this witness matter, and to be clear, this may be the time to do it, but again, and everybody needs to know that the backroom politics, I'm not so much into it all, and I'm not too adept at it neither. But there was a stipulation. They felt pretty comfortable after day two until their case was tested on day three. Now is the time to end this. Now is the time to hear the closing arguments. Now is the time to vote your conscience. Thank you.
And that was the voice of Michael Vanderveen, Philadelphia-based personal injury lawyer and representing former President Donald Trump in this impeachment trial.
We were involved in no discussions about
the stipulation. And now the voice of Jamie Raskin, lead House impeachment manager.
No further comment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Position on that.
Right now, House managers are looking to call witnesses in this impeachment trial.
I would remind everybody as Chief Justice Roberts noted on January 21st, 2020, citing the trial of Charles Swain in 1905, all parties in this chamber must refrain from using language that is not conducive to civil discourse. I listened to Chief Justice Roberts say that. I agreed with him, and I thought for our colleagues I would repeat it as I did last night.
And an admonishment there from Senator Patrick Leahy after an outburst of laughter during this trial. Again, this was during the debate over whether or not to have witnesses.
So the question we have before us is whether it shall be in order to consider and debate under the rules of impeachment any motion to subpoena witnesses or documents.
And to bring it back to the news here, one of their calls is to subpoena Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler, a Republican, who did vote to impeach President Trump about his state of mind at the time of the riot, at the time of the attack. And here comes the vote.
This, we understand, is a majority vote. Of course, the eventual vote on the acquittal or conviction of the former president will be a two-thirds vote. But in this case, a simple majority would proceed with witnesses. Claudia Grisales, our NPR, our NPR congressional reporter, can you remind us what the key information that Jamie Herrera Butler says she has is and why this is only coming up today? Saturday, nearly a week into this trial.
Yes, as you mentioned, Herrera Butler was one of the 10 House Republicans who voted for the impeachment of former President Trump. And she issued a statement last night saying, I've touched on this before. I will touch on it again. There was a conversation between House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. He relayed that to her that he had had with President Trump at the time during the insurrection. He said that when he finally reached the president that day and asked him to publicly, forcefully call off that riot, the president initially repeated a falsehood that it was Antifa that had breached the Capitol. McCarthy refuted that, told the president that these were Trump supporters. And that's when, according to McCarthy, the president said, well, Kevin, I guess these people are more upset about the election than you are. And she said since she publicly announced her decision to vote for impeachment, she has shared these details in countless conversations. And she wanted to tell others. She called out to patriots who were standing next to the former vice president as these conversations were happening, or to come forward. If you have something to add here, she said, now would be the time. So, of course, this has elevated interest for these managers to hear from her as soon as possible.
Have we heard from the House Minority Leader, Kevin McCarthy, about this conversation? Of course, McCarthy has vacillated back and forth, condemning the president, then voting against his impeachment, then flying down to Mar-a-Lago and taking a picture with the former president.
Yeah, he has been very limited publicly in terms of how he is addressing this and his connection with the former president. So we are still waiting to hear from him on how he's reacting to all this.
Tamara Keith, I want to bring you in here to talk maybe about the defense that came to this call to bring Herrera Butler. What were Trump's attorneys saying?
Yeah, so the attorney Vanderveen said that if you're going to have one witness, I want 100 witnesses. And he also said that he wanted those witnesses to be deposed in person, not over Zoom, despite the fact that we are in a pandemic and travel is not recommended at this time. He said everyone should come to his office in Philadelphia, where he is a personal injury attorney, and do it the right way. I think that he was sort of overstating the case to then argue, hey, Democrats had their chance on the House side. You know, before they voted to impeach him, the House could have done a thorough investigation, which they did not do. The argument then that Jamie Raskin, the lead House impeachment manager, made was that it's like a grand jury on the House side. The Senate is where the trial occurs and where a deposition should happen, and where in the Clinton impeachment it did. However, in the first Trump impeachment, Republicans were in the majority and they chose not to call witnesses.
This is a good moment to bring in Nina Totenberg, our legal affairs correspondent. Nina, I think we were all noting just outright laughter in that moment. But can you talk about kind of the legal implications of what he was suggesting, and maybe why people responded the way they did?
Mr. Risch. Mr. Romney.
And we're going to bring Nina back in a moment. Scott, I can bring it to you. Obviously, you've been watching the last couple of days. That was a rare moment. People could call it levity, but I think it signals just kind of where heads are at this point.
Yeah, and I think Van der Veen has certainly certainly been antagonistic at times toward the U.S. senators who are serving as witnesses in this trial. At one point, suggesting that something that Senator Tuberville of Alabama said was hearsay. He's, of course, a witness in that case. He had a contentious back and forth moment with Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders as well. And the question of witnesses and whether they're appropriate or not is kind of a double-edged sword for the defense team. And Claudia Grisales, I'm curious what you think about this, because on one hand, Van der Veen and Bruce Castor keep saying the House Democrats don't know the full story here. They're saying they're relying on news reports. They're saying here they have open questions about what happened in the White House on the 6th. And yet they voted for impeachment and moved forward without fully investigating their case. Then, Claudia, at the same time, they're saying it's not their responsibility to fill in those blanks on those key questions of President Trump's mindset.
Yes. So this is going to be a different scenario that we're looking at right now. These managers, these House impeachment managers, are going to be facing a lot of pressure not to call witnesses, because there is going to be a look back on this. There's been talk about a 9/11 style commission to really do a deep dive on what happened the day of the insurrection, the factors that led up to it. So these managers are under pressure to call for witnesses, whether or not this vote gets them there, but at least to show that they made that attempt. As for Trump's defense team, this is an argument that they're going to be repeating in terms of compared to concerns that they expressed last year, even, which is that witnesses are not necessary.
Claudia, I'd also, we're going to head back to the floor in just a moment. How significant is it that Herrera Butler is even making herself available or making a statement?
This is a very big deal. This is a House Republican. We've seen other House Republicans really face some severe backlash who voted for the impeachment. She is virtually putting her career on the line just with the impeachment vote. And now with this statement, she is really going ahead and trying to put out there, this is what I've heard, and others can corroborate it. And she's pleading for others who can to come forward. So this is really significant for her and the step that she's taking and the fallout that she may face as a result.
All right. I think we're getting some information about the vote currently. Scott, do you want to bring us up to date?
Yeah. Patrick Leahy, the Senate President Pro Tem, has not announced the final tally yet. But as senators were doing the roll call votes, we did hear several Republicans vote yes to bring witnesses in, including Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, two Republicans, Ben Sasse.
Voting in the affirmative.
Here's the clerk reading the roll.
Baldwin, Bennett, Blumenthal,
and as he
Booker,
goes through the roll call
Brown,
vote, it sounds
Cantwell,
like a majority
Cantwell,
of senators
Corporate,
has voted
Casey,
to, yes, proceed
Collins,
with witnesses
Coons,
to get a deposition
Masco,
from Jamie Herrera Butler, who, to remind
Durbin,
everyone,
Feinstein,
is a Republican
Gilliman,
member of the House. She is one of 10
Cameron,
Republicans
Hickenlooper,
who voted to Corona, impeach former Kane, President Trump
Kelly,
in the most bipartisan Kane, impeachment
Klobuchar,
vote in the House ever.
Leahy,
audience, an open question now of what happens next. Both sides indicated they were not going to push for witnesses. Senators on both sides seemed to indicate the trial was going to move forward and conclude today. We do not know how long of a break will be needed for this deposition or if this opens the door to many more witnesses.
And why I highly doubt that these witnesses are going to be brought to Philadelphia to be deposed by Michael Van der Veen. He did make the argument, essentially, that if there were going to be witnesses, that he had a long list of people that he thought should be called, Senators including Vice President Kamala Harris and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. The reality is, who are the people who could potentially be on a witness list? Is this something that had really been discussed this week? Claudia?
They were barreling forward as if they would not call witnesses. To be clear, senior aides to the House impeachment managers continue to deflect all week on whether they would call witnesses. And that was something that we were not completely clear on. But when we talked to members, Democrats and Republicans, they seemed to signal the chances for witnesses were not there. There's a different motivation this year compared to last year, which is both sides want to move through this trial as quickly as possible. And that's how this has all been building up, as if they might wrap this trial today. But
then let me jump in with this potential vote. If it's heading in the direction people think, does it mean voting on each and every witness? I mean, what of this threat to call more?
So it really depends. That is the next step.
Claudia, it looks like Lindsey Graham, South Carolina Republican, has gotten up to speak. Sorry, he might have been changing his vote there. I'm not entirely sure what happened. He changed his vote to yes. Ms. President, forward.
I should add here that Graham has discussed witnesses before. He said if they do open this can of worms, he'll want to call a dozen others as well.
Tamara Keith, as the Senate sorts this out, can you remind us how many open questions we have here about President Trump's mindset in the Oval Office, in the White House on January 6th, in the early hours of this attack on the Capitol?
Yeah, let me just say that most of what we know about the president's mindset has been learned through media reports, often reliable media reports, but media reports from unnamed aides who were completely freaked out about the situation that was happening on January 6th inside the White House, things that the president was saying. That is the message that was leaked out of the White House. But certainly, if there were people under oath, it would be fascinating to hear from, for instance, Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, Vice President Mike Pence, his Chief of Staff, Mark Short, Kevin McCarthy, any number of Republicans who called the president and tried to get him to make a stronger statement or any statement at all.
And here's Patrick Leahy again.
That is established Senate procedure that we always follow.
And right now, we're awaiting the final count on a vote to subpoena witnesses and documents for the trial, for the second impeachment trial, Donald J. Trump.
Nina Totenberg, let's go to you with the understanding that we might have to pause and listen to Patrick Leahy as soon as you start talking. But can you give us a sense of what, in recent impeachment history, whether witnesses have or have not usually played a role in these Senate trials once it gets to the Senate?
Well, in the Clinton impeachment, Monica Lewinsky was deposed, and I am trying to check who was the lead Democratic questioner, but my recollection is that it was Senator John Edwards, later to have his own sex scandal and to sort of retire from the political scene. And I think that given that everybody wants to move ahead, they're probably going to have to vote on every witness, and that Mr. Van Der Veen likely won't get his way, not just about deposing anybody in Philadelphia, but here. If he has somebody specific he wants to depose, he might get one. But almost everything in the Senate is done either in pitched battle or by agreement, as you know. Mm-hmm. And here, the by agreement part may turn out to be both sides have a reason to move on. The Republicans don't want to focus on Donald Trump forever, and the Democrats want to move on with the Biden agenda. But this information, once it popped yesterday, and I guess we should give credit where credit is due, which is on CNN, and people were either anonymously or, as in with the case of Ms. Butler, doing it in person and stepping up to the line, it was obvious that this, if you were going to have witnesses,
and Nina,
this was a witness to have.
It looks like Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is now standing up at his desk ready to speak to the chamber. We have the House Democratic managers huddling. We have the Trump defense team huddling. They're talking to Ted Cruz right now, the Texas senator, who has spent a lot of time conferring with the former president's defense team. We should just be clear, Audie, we do not know what's going to happen next. We do not know how long of a break would happen, and there's a gavel.
On the question of whether it shall be in order to consider and debate under the rules of impeachment any motion to subpoena witnesses or documents, the motion is agreed to by a vote of 55 to 45. Majority Leader.
Mr. President, I suggest the absence of a quorum.
Clerk will call the roll.
All right. While they're doing that roll call, we should say that vote to have witnesses in this trial was in favor, 55 to 45. And there's some questions we're still trying to understand right now. And honestly, looking at the floor, I wonder if there's some lawmakers who are also wondering the answer to this as well, how many witnesses that might be, whether they'd have to vote on any number of witnesses or on each and every witness. A lot of questions going into this Saturday when people thought that this trial might wrap up fairly quickly. I want to bring back Claudia Grisales, just to remind us what jump-started this conversation, which was a statement from Representative Jamie Herrera Butler. Can you tell us the details of that?
Yes, so she issued a statement last night. This is in follow-up to comments she made during her floor speech when she had voted, she had planned to vote for the impeachment of former President Trump. And she had recounted a conversation that House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy shared with her, which was that during the insurrection, a conversation that happened between McCarthy and then President Trump. It was a yelling match. And she recounted that the president had told McCarthy that perhaps the folks, these insurrectionists, cared more about this issue of his presidency and the election than Kevin did. That's how he was speaking to him. And so she's called others who may have overheard this conversation to come forward and talk about it. She's really putting herself on the line here, even just starting with the impeachment vote. And now she could be, it appears she will be a witness in this trial.
And CNN, of course, reported these details about this call last night. House Democrats are essentially making the case about Trump's mindset at the moment of the riot and this issue of incitement. Right now, we're in the middle of a quorum call. Scott Detrow, talk about what that is, because there's still plenty of people on the floor. And you've also noted the people who are kind of huddling, for instance, with the Trump defense team.
The short answer is that right now, lots of senators are standing around talking to each other on the Senate floor. It seems like both sides are trying to figure out what exactly happens next. Among the open questions, would this deposition happen right away? Would the Senate recess for an entire day, perhaps, come back tomorrow once the deposition takes place? I think there are a lot of timing questions. Also, the question that we were talking about, how many more witnesses might possibly be offered up, or is this just Congresswoman Butler? And, you know, Tamara Keith, we always keep coming back to the idea that this is a political proceeding. This is not a legal trial. The first news we had this morning was that the Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell had told his colleagues he's going to vote to acquit. Can you give us an update, provide the context of the political backlash that that Representative Herrera Butler and the other House Republicans who voted to impeach have faced since that vote, and how Senate Republicans are factoring those politics into their decision on what to do today?
Certainly. So those 10 House Republicans who voted to impeach voted at a time when it seemed like President Trump could be losing a little bit of power. But immediately there was backlash, particularly from their local Republican Party apparatuses. They were sanctioned. They were basically accused of being rhinos and not true Republicans, because it turns out that even now, as he's out of office, fidelity to President Trump is the most important qualifying factor for being considered a real Republican, certainly in the Trump faction of the party, which is the big, powerful faction. And just as an example of that, Kevin McCarthy, who apparently, according to Herrera Butler, had a harrowing conversation with President Trump on January 6th, Kevin McCarthy had, in a floor speech, although he voted against impeachment, he said that President Trump bore some responsibility for it.
And Tam, let's actually pause there and make this point. I pointed out earlier that Michael Vanderbeek at one point said that a senator's direct conversation was hearsay. That's not hearsay. That's direct evidence. That's direct
evidence.
Experience. But in this case, the House Democrats are subpoenaing someone who is talking about hearsay. And maybe Nina, please back me up on this. If they have depositioned Jamie Herrera Butler for recounting someone else's phone conversation, why not subpoena Kevin McCarthy, who had the phone conversation?
Good question, because he keeps changing what he says about various events. I mean, after all, as Tam just pointed out, he's changed his view. He condemned the president on the floor of the House, and then voted not to certify the election. He said at one point that Biden had won the election, and then voted not to certify the election. He can't be counted on as a witness. So if you want to get him, if this were an actual legal proceeding, we wouldn't have 100 witnesses. They'd call five. The five they could figure out had already talked to reporters, and they'd get them all to say what they either heard McCarthy say, or what he said again in the caucus meeting, because according to the stories, he said some of the same things in large groups, not just small groups, about this conversation. And then you'd call McCarthy. But if you call McCarthy now, you figure that he's going to find some way out of it. And, you know, you need verifiable and you need a lot of witnesses to corner a witness, or you need to call nobody.
I also want to take a look at this vote. Every time there's a vote, I feel like we're paying attention to especially the Republicans who may be crossing the aisle, so to speak. Either Claudia, maybe Tam can talk about who are the names we've seen so far on this vote in particular.
Yes, we're seeing these moderate Republicans who have been the votes have to watch in terms of those who may go against the party and vote for former President Trump's conviction. So this includes Senators Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Mitt Romney of Utah, Ben Sasse of Nebraska. Those are four of the six that we're watching there, and they had joined with Democrats today to approve this effort to call witnesses.
And did you mention Cassidy there?
And Cassidy was not part of the list today. So there were two members, Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, who has also voted for the constitutionality of the trial, as well as Bill Cassidy of Louisiana. Those are two other members we've been watching who may vote to convict for President Trump. They did not join in the call for witnesses.
Right now, we are in the midst of a quorum call in this impeachment trial. This is not really a social hour. There are some lawmakers who are hitting the hallways to talk to reporters. Some people in the past, we've talked about the idea that this is where deals are made, right? This is where the conversation happens. And that's important in this moment because this question of witnesses is somewhat unexpected. Maybe you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. Lots of nodding faces here. Why was it unexpected? Scott, jump in.
So I think one contextual piece here is what happened yesterday during the question and answer session. It went on for several hours.
And this is when senators, as jurors, got to pose questions to the attorneys from both sides.
That's right. And repeatedly, the Republican senators whose votes are in question here, who have indicated they are open to voting to convict, asked both former President Trump's legal team and the House Democrats presenting the prosecution for details about what the president was doing when the riot began, particularly at that moment, when, particularly once Mike Pence was in danger, the vice president, repeatedly asking, when did President Trump know that Mike Pence was in danger? Because Senator Tuberville of Alabama has said he told the president that on the phone. And then after that phone conversation, Trump tweeted out an attack of Mike Pence, who at that moment was fleeing a mob in the Capitol. Tamara Keith, it seems like this question of did the president continue to egg on a mob to attack his vice president, you know, when you see how the mob was reacting in the Capitol that day, chanting hang Mike Pence, seems to be a very critical question for those lawmakers on the fence here.
Yeah. And as another reminder, the president's tweet criticizing Mike Pence while he was fleeing. That tweet, the House impeachment managers showed video of an insurrectionist reading that tweet out loud into a megaphone as people were charging the Capitol. So in terms of the insurrection case that the impeachment managers are trying to make, that is a key moment. This whole tweet following the insurrection beginning, showing in theory that Trump knew it was happening and he didn't care, or that he was okay with it. And then, of course, there was the 6 p.m. tweet where he essentially said, this is what you get. This is what you get when you go against my election.
And Nina Totenberg, looks like you want to add something. Then I have a question for you after that.
Yeah, the main thing I wanted to say is that if you're pitching an argument to the jury here, the United States Senate, and in particular Republicans, the obvious place that the Democratic House managers have to go is this idea that Pence was thrown to the wolves by the president at a time when he saw the wolves, understood what was going on, and understood that his safety was in jeopardy. So with the contemporaneous tweet, but even worse, later with the tweet later. And so that you could expect would be the emphasis of their argument, their closing argument. And here they have what they think is further proof of that, that McCarthy knew that too.
Nina, a big part of the defense that we heard yesterday was that the impeachment was rushed on the House side, They voted to impeach the president a week after the events in question. There was not the long committee hearing process that we saw in the first impeachment of President Trump, in the President Clinton impeachment. Do they have a point there? Should the House Democrats have done this digging before they brought those charges forward?
Well, they have a point, but the counterpoint is he's in office now. Now is the time to do it. Mm-hmm. If we wait too long, then they'll say they don't have jurisdiction. This was a no-win proposition for them either way. They were going to get dumped on this way, which they have, and they would have been dumped on the other way. And the critical point, I think, really, is that in the House, and I expect that there were other people on the Republican side more than the 10, people felt more threatened than they did in the Senate. Mm-hmm. It's not that they were more threatened, but the senators didn't see it. I mean, you heard Romney say, for example, that he didn't realize how close he came until he saw the video during the impeachment proceeding.
Right,
but in the House, they were on the floor, told to put on their gas masks, and terrified as they're hearing gunshots outside and hearing protesters or rioters banging on the door and seeing the gas crack. That didn't happen in the Senate. They got out quicker.
Even though the Senate was breached by the mob, those pictures of the man in the horned hat standing on the dais in Vice President Pence's seat. You're right. Guns were drawn in the House. Somebody was shot and killed in the Speaker's lobby right around the corner from the House chamber.
And for people who are jumping in now, we have just had a vote in favor of having witnesses. That vote was 55-45. This was sparked by the introduction of possible evidence comments from Congresswoman Jamie Butler Herrera, who says that she overheard a conversation between Kevin McCarthy and President Trump. This is a key moment because, as Trump's attorneys argue, they claim that incitement is a point in time when the words are spoken, and they're also arguing that what happened before the attack and what happened after are somehow not relevant. Nina, can you talk about how the Trump team has kind of gone about their arguments today?
Well, I think they've adopted the posture of their client, which is extremely combative, and you know, Ted Cruz is consulting with him, so they've adopted his extremely combative style too. But their client, former President Trump, this is his style. Whatever they say to you, you throw it back to them in spades. And of course, it's also the tactic of a good trial lawyer, especially a good trial lawyer who's in a bit of trouble. In the last analysis, of course, I think everybody in the room expects the president likely will be acquitted. Mm-hmm. But they don't want to. This is a moment when it could get worse for the ex-president. It could get worse for the Democrats, too, I suppose.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if Congresswoman Butler says under oath, for example, what she has said to reporters, then obviously it is hearsay. She wasn't part of that conversation. So the next thing you do is you go to McCarthy. And supposing McCarthy does what he's done before, which is to waffle.
Claudia, can I bring you in on that? Because Kevin McCarthy has had quite the evolution in terms of his commentary in the aftermath of the insurrection. Can you give us a sense of that and also bring us up to date on what's happening on the floor?
Right. Just in the hours and days following the insurrection, McCarthy was part of this wave of Republicans who seemed to look at the president and see his role in the insurrection, call him out in their respective chambers. But within days in McCarthy's case, he was flying down to the former president's Mar-a-Lago resort to meet with him. So, yes, he has had quite a shift there, and he has spoken very little about his connection to Trump since that day, at least publicly.
Tamara, Keith, let's talk about the current president for a few minutes here.
Sure.
President Biden, the Biden White House, have done everything they can to keep this Senate trial as far off the radar as possible, repeatedly refusing to weigh in on it, repeatedly trying to prove that they are moving forward in governing. If this trial does not wrap up today, does not wrap up tomorrow, that is a huge problem for the Biden agenda.
President Biden and his spokespeople have been like, nah, 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 nah. What impeachment trial? It's not happening.
That's a technical term.
Yes.
Nah, 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 nah.
Yeah, and it's going to be really hard to keep that up. Next week, President Biden is set to go to Wisconsin to hold a town hall televised event to discuss his American Rescue Plan. It's a $1.9 trillion piece of legislation that he would like to get passed quickly. Unemployment benefits run out March 15th, March 13th, sometime early-ish March. And at that point, I mean, that is the drop dead deadline. Yesterday had mayors and governors, a bipartisan group, to the White House to push for one of the more controversial and key components, as far as the White House and these mayors see it, of state and local aid. It is very hard to get legislation through Congress if Congress is 8 hours a day glued to their seats doing an impeachment trial.
And let's remind everybody, House committees are, in fact, trying to write the details of that bill right now. The Senate had taken an initial step. It's a complicated process. But the bottom line is this bill needs to be batted back and forth by two chambers with very narrow Democratic margins on a very tight timeline. I think a really contentious trial makes that pretty hard to move forward.
I just want to jump in here one second, because while they are in quorum, they are also in conversation. And what you guys are saying is reminding us all just how much is at stake here and what is clearly a turning point in this second impeachment trial. Claudia, can you give us a sense of who's huddling and why this is such a kind of busy moment? Question mark.
Right. Yes. We're getting reports from reporters who are in the chamber, in the gallery. This is part of a Capitol Hill pool system that we have going. And we can see a little bit on the screen. There's these huddles that have formed after this vote. It seemed that confusion was widespread after this, just to illustrate how unexpected this all was.
Again, this was a vote on one article of impeachment against former President Trump, but specifically about the idea of calling witnesses, something that originally Democrats were not so inclined to do, but in this moment have changed their minds.
Exactly. And one member we had heard from before the trial began was Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. He said if witnesses are called, this is going to open up a can of worms, and he has his own list. He named about a dozen folks that he thinks could be witnesses as well. So both Democrats and Republicans now are looking at strategies in terms of how to approach this. And according to this poll report we got recently, Graham was in one of these huddles, and he was explaining what the next steps may be to other allies of the former president. This includes Mike Lee of Utah, Senator Ron Johnson, Senator Tom Cotton, many others huddled with him. Meanwhile, leadership for the Republican Senate, this includes Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, was talking to two or three of the members who may be in that group who could vote to convict the president. That's Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and Mitt Romney of Utah. So many huddles like this occurred on the floor in the minutes after this vote. You can tell they're trying to see what the path forward is next on the witnesses.
Claudia, is there any tea leaf reading we can do? Maybe the answer is just no. On the Republicans who have switched their votes on the procedural questions so far, people like, I believe you said, Pat Toomey, who voted that this trial was constitutional, but now have voted against moving forward with witnesses.
It's possible that perhaps they have already, they're telegraphing that they've already arrived at their decision. They didn't need witnesses to sway them one way or another. But which way that is, there's still some question marks in terms of how they may feel. For example, Cassidy was pressed quite a bit yesterday on how he felt. He was photographed with a statement, and it appeared that he was going to vote not to convict the president, but he wanted to be clear that he hasn't reached the decision. Perhaps statements have been prepared ahead of time before the decision. He could go either way. But yes, the tea leaves, they're still a little difficult to read on how two members, Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania and Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, may go on this conviction vote.
Just to give people a sense of the moment when the idea of witnesses was introduced, you had House Impeachment Manager Jamie Raskin bringing this up, and Graham, Senator Senator Graham just kind of shaking his head, right, and putting his head down for a moment. There was a huge laugh when Trump attorney Vanderveen said he wanted the witnesses to come to his office in Philadelphia, to the point where Patrick Leahy had to pause and tell everyone basically to chill out. The rules matter, right, Nina Totenberg? I was hearing Trent Lott speak a few days ago about what it was like during the Clinton impeachment and how long it took them just to map out questions like this. Here we are doing it, I won't say on the fly, but clearly this has raised a lot of questions.
Well, also, there was a great deal more bipartisanship about how to proceed, not what the outcome would be, but how to proceed. So Lott and Daschle had a very close working relationship at the time. It may be that McConnell and Schumer will come to that now that the Senate is divided 50-50 and the Democrats have a majority only by the single vote of the vice president. But in the past, they have not had that kind of close working relationship. And therefore, there was a lot more trust between Lott and Daschle. And, you know, it's very interesting because Lindsey Graham always has a flair for the moment, I guess we should call it. It occasionally comes back to bite him in the fanny when he says something that he said exactly the opposite, you know, some time ago. But I think he accurately perceives that the House managers did what any good litigator would do. They saw a witness and went for it. And now they're a little bit like the dog that caught the car. They don't, you know, they've gotten themselves in a bit of a mess because the Democrats do want to wrap this up. So do the Republicans, because it's a nasty reminder of how bad the situation was in less than a month, or in about a month ago, and how terrifying it was. But I'd say the Democrats have a larger motivation at the moment, at this instant moment. And he, I think, has accurately, he was a JAG lawyer, and he knows how he knows what you do in a moment like this. When they give you a small gift, you make it a big gift.
Claudia Grossalis, you are on Capitol Hill for us, just off the Senate floor. Let's take a step back and remind everybody what is happening right now. The Senate has voted to proceed with witnesses after a surprise request from the House Democratic team. They want to subpoena Jamie Herrera Butler, a Washington State Republican, somebody who did vote to impeach former President Trump, based on conversations she has said she had with Kevin McCarthy, the House minority leader, with President Trump in the middle of the attack on the Capitol on the 6th. Tell us what is happening next and what other details we have learned about how senators are reacting to all of this on the floor.
Yes, now that the Senate has voted to subpoena witnesses and documents in this trial, now they have they're buying themselves time in order to review these documents. This would be done in closed session, so not in front of the public, where we can, for example, we can see the chamber now. Senator John Cornyn is huddled with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and others right now, trying to catch up on these next steps and what they're going to be doing to move forward. The next step here, however, would be the Senate would decide if any depositions or review of any documents of any of the witnesses and if they will testify. The impeachment managers did mention a subpoena, as we heard, for Representative Herrera Butler, but it's not clear who else they would want to depose if they want to grow that list. And of course, we heard from Trump's defense team that he would need over 100 depositions. Again, Republicans are seeing this in some ways as kind of opening a can of worms. Now they're going to be strategizing. If we're going to do witnesses, then we have our slate we need to call as well.
We have much more to come. We're going to be taking a short break. Right now, the Senate is in the midst of a quorum call. And you're listening to live special coverage from NPR News. We are following the second impeachment trial of President Trump, the trial going on in the United States Senate. We hope you'll stay with us as we have more analysis and await more debate on this question.
WJFF Jeffersonville, New York. W233AH Monticello, New York. Streaming online at WJFFradio.org.
This is Radio Catskill. your NPR station for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Your community radio station.
Keeping you connected with continuing coverage of NPR's news is special coverage of the impeachment trial, a surprise that just happened. They're in the middle of a quorum call and debate about whether calling witnesses. We'll resume that coverage in just a second. A quick check of the weather. Light snow possible after 4, highs in the mid-20s. Tonight, freezing drizzle, snow, and ice overnight. Little to no snow accumulation, low of 18. Now back to Washington.